Hello, welcome to the Gab and Jules show. No Gab Marcotti today because he's crying in Philadelphia. Oh, bless him. Sorry, Gab, but the Super Bowl didn't go in his favor. And he's his favorite Philadelphia Eagles. There's always next year, Gabby. Don't worry about that. Instead, Don Hutchinson is here, man. Thank you so much for coming. There's a packed show, of course, because we had some controversy and drama in the Premier League and some great results, some great goals in Germany. Big results in Spain as well, with Barcelona winning, Real Madrid winning another title, PSG.
Ooh.
What a car crash it is. But we start in at West Ham. West Ham against Chelsea on Saturday. I know it's a few days ago. But it was a big game for Graham Potter because away from home, the form had been terrible for Chelsea. I mean, overall, the form had been terrible.
2 wins and 13.
Yeah. And they go to West Ham. Not an easy place to be. West Ham a little bit better. And what happened? The first half is actually good
Amazing.
For Chelsea.
Amazing. I thought they looked slick. I thought João Félix was amazing. I thought he looked really good, scored a great goal. I thought Enzo in the middle of the park dominated. Declan Rice this morning talking about how good of a performance it was from him. Yeah. And he had to try and problem solve and figure out how good he was and where he was shifting the ball. And then my feeling when I watch Chelsea is they're a nice side to watch, beautiful side to watch at times, as in the first 30 minutes against West Ham. But if you stay in the game and you get to an hour and you're 1-0 down or 1-1, 0-0, they're not a ruthless side under Graham Potter. I think they're an easy side. I think they're a good side to watch. They're easy on the eye, but they should have put West Ham away in the first half an hour of the game. They didn't, and then they paid the price.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, great goal by João Félix.
Beautiful finish.
First one coming back from the suspension. The ball from Enzo is
even the finish. You know, for any kids watching the finish, it was an instep finish, but right the last second, he just opened up the ankle just to guide it into the corner.
It's such a he's a beautiful player.
He's a lovely player. I love him
when he's like that. So in that first half hour, let's say first half, with the ball, everything, the elegance, you know, going forwards. The vision, the passing. There's a couple of times. There's one time where he could put Mudryk through and keeps the ball a little bit too much, maybe.
It's a mystery, really, why, when you look back on his career, why he signed for someone like Simeone with his
style. I mean, who told him it was a good idea?
I've got no idea. I've been tweeting Jules constantly about João Félix. I'm a massive fan.
Yeah.
And I've always thought if he was under the likes of Pep, I think Pep would turn him into the world's best.
Yeah.
I think he's amazing.
I know. I agree with you. But they let West Ham come back into the game. That goal, that MSN score, that a team like Chelsea should not, you know, from the ball was from the right hand side with the cross, ends up with the left wing back.
Yeah. I thought Bowen was the problem for them. In that scenario, I remember watching the game unfold and Jared Bowen had made a run down the right-hand side and he didn't get the ball. And he sort of ended up standing still, but he stood still for an age.
Yeah.
And I thought Enzo Fernandez in front of him and Badiashile behind him, there was no sort of communication between the two. He was the one that then flicked it on and then Emerson ran the far post, got the tap in. But it was a good recovery from West Ham.
But after that, from Chelsea, the second half? I don't know. Do you think physically they're not up for it? Do you think that mentally, when they get pegged back like that, and like you said before, under pressure, they're not ruthless enough?
Well, I want to see who's the one in that team, Jules, or the two or three in that team that's ruthless enough to go and get goals. Because even though I'm a massive João Félix fan, the contradiction is he's never had more than 10 assists a season.
No, that's
he's never had more than 10 goals a season. So it's not a slight on him. It just tells you that his output is not quite there.
Yeah.
Havertz doesn't convince me as a number nine.
No.
Fantastic footballer.
But you know, we go back to what we said a bit the other day. So you've got a lot of new players and young players. Mudryk is young and this is all
raw,
new to him.
Very
João
raw.
Félix, Madueke is young and raw as well. This is all new to him. Enzo is young and this is all, even if he's got the potential to be, you know, one of the best in the world and a proper leader, but this is all new to him.
Yeah.
You go to a place like West Ham and they go back to 1-1 and you've got Antonio and Suchek and Rice and all those, that physicality as well as the atmosphere and everything. And, And maybe
it's almost
just
like
not ready for that team. Thiago Silva really is the only one. Badiashile is young at the back.
He's done really well, by the way.
Yeah. And Reece James and then Chilwell coming back. Reece James look good. But then maybe they don't have enough now to respond to teams like that.
Maybe if you look a little bit deeper, maybe if you scratch the surface, it's a Graham Potter Chelsea side that's playing the same way as his Brighton side did, who weren't particularly ruthless. So their XG, all of the every time you watch the Brighton side, was quite high and they didn't get the goals. It's almost like, I think, Chelsea, I think they want to play, or Graham Potter wants to play the perfect game. And they want to play the perfect game, control the game, look easy on the eye, play nice football, win 1 or 2 nil. Premier League doesn't work like that. You've got to be ruthless. You've got to stick teams away. We've all seen the movie before when you don't take your chances and you win them 1-0 and you give up chances. We've seen the movie where someone will get back in the game.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened to them.
Var had a shocking weekend, of course, especially Saturday. He started with this game. So first call is the offside on the Suchek goal, which is fine.
Fine.
Rice, Suchek, etc. However, the handball.
I mean, he only dives on the ball, doesn't he?
So Suchek is a shot by Gallagher, I think it is. Yeah, and it's not even that powerful.
No.
And then Suchek goes to Grant and clearly makes a move and makes a move with his arm towards the ball to kind of slow it down, and then it's easy for
Fabinho. It's one of the easiest.
How?
I don't know, Jules. I've got no excuse how they've not give that as a penalty. And the excuse that they've give is they thought Thomas Soucek was breaking his fall. So as in he was falling down.
Yeah, like,
and then he put his hand to sort of protect it.
I mean, come on.
He's dived on it. I mean, like, if Thomas Soucek is standing up and Gallagher takes the shot and it hits him on the arm and he's a little bit, you might say, oh, he's unlucky, or his arm was close, or he's dived on it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done Fabianski's job for him.
I don't know.
It's a penalty.
That was terrible.
Everything's there. Everything's there for the referee. If the referee missed it, he missed it. But VAR should be sitting there watching that. Take your time. Make sure you analyse it. But the giveaway was the player's reaction for a start. Thomas Soucek knew he was guilty.
Face, he knew, like,
but everyone,
uh-oh.
But everyone, uh-oh. Like Jules, like everyone, they're watching a player in Thomas Soucek dive on the ball. Oh, I mean, how many clues do you want?
I know. They're like, I mean, I think Craig Pawson, who is the referee.
Yeah. I'd give him an out.
I think Ogbonna is maybe blocking the view a little bit, but it's not a hard one to see. Anyway, Niels Warbrick, who is the VAR referee in that game.
You've got all the angles.
How?
Take your time.
But like, it's just common sense. And we say the downfall of VAR at times this season, not just in England, but everywhere, was the guy who's on VAR.
Yeah.
Just his interpretation was completely stupid.
See, I think it's getting to the point now where I think referees have got to demand, the on-field referee has got to demand to the VAR officials.
Yeah.
I'm going to the monitor. Get it ready for me.
Yeah, so not the other around. At the moment, it's the other around.
Exactly.
So you go, if they say, you should come and have a look.
Referees are good referees. They know their job. I think they've lost a bit of confidence. I think since VAR's come in, at times, I think they've stopped reffing games. They're waiting for the VAR guy to see it on the TV and give them the information. But they've got an instinct, referees, and normally their instinct is quite right. I think referees now should take charge. And as I said, say to Niels Warbrick, get it ready. I'm going to the monitor. I think something's happened. I can tell by the crowd reaction. There's something on Thomas Soucek's face that tells me he's guilty, but I couldn't see it because, like you said, Ogbonna was in the way. Go and get it ready. And then once you see it, you go, penalty. Has to be. It's the only conclusion.
I know. It's crazy. So lucky in the end for West Ham because they get that one that goes their way. Before that, their second goal was disallowed, rightly so, as we said, on the Suchek goal for offside.
Yeah.
From a West Ham point of view, one of your former clubs, this is a bit better. There's the draw at Newcastle away, now you draw at home to Chelsea. You kind of get that momentum going a little bit. You're still only 2 points, I think, above the
drop. The signs.
There's that stuff, Why is it a little bit different? Just realising that there was urgency there?
Yeah, and sometimes, because David Moyes is a pragmatic manager, and now he's got Italy's number 9 in Gianluca Scamacca. He's got Brazil's number 10 in Lucas Paquetar. Yeah. He's got this quality of player to work with. So the style has gone against how David Moyes has managed over the years. So he's trying to change the style and make West Ham a little bit more easy on the eye. So that might take a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. Thomas Soucek and Declan Rice were amazing last season as a pair. So Paquetar's come in for Soucek and he's playing alongside Rice, who's a completely different player.
Yeah.
So Paquetar wants to come to the defenders and get on the ball and start all the play, where David Moyes really is the type of manager sometimes bypass the midfield,
play long,
go and press them in their half. So that takes a little bit of time. And I think momentum and confidence, they get the win against Everton. Important 3 points. Mm. Played really well against Newcastle after going 1-0 behind inside 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So you come back to St James's Park, you take a good point from there, and then deserved point against Chelsea. Well, deserved point in terms of performance, luck, obviously with a VAR. So it gives them that mini run of 3 games unbeaten.
Yeah, I think Aguerd, who obviously
amazing
came
player
from Rennes.
You told me about him
a year ago. And then finally played a little bit before the World Cup, then was really good at the World Cup, although, again, there was an injury. And now I thought in that game was outstanding. And I think the back five is also helping them. I mean, I'm not a Soufal fan, but I think he keeps making the wrong decision. And I thought with the ball on transition, West Ham there's a few times where they made the wrong call and, you know, passed the ball there when the ball has to go wide or the other way around. So it could have even been better. But I thought they look more solid maybe than what they used to before.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. And that comes with a lot of work on the training ground, manager drilling in the shape, depending on what personnel. And he lost Pakatar to a shoulder injury during the game, didn't he? That's a blow. But then Socek comes in and he plays alongside Declan Rice, who makes them a little bit more harder to beat in the middle of the park. And then they've got the talent up front. You know, they've got the likes of Bowen, they've got, you know, Benrahma. They've got enough players where he's got enough bodies to work with, enough skillful players to work with. It's trying to marry up the different styles, I think, Jules. Trying to marry up a different style of play with the guys that I mentioned, or do you go a little bit more aggressive and on the front foot and combative and being hard to beat? So that's where I think over the last few months, David Moyes has struggled, but they look good in the last three games.
Going back to Chelsea, talking about identity, it's still hard to see what Graham Potter is doing, really. And we mentioned the good first half hour where Joao Felix was clearly at the heart of everything. And, you know, Enzo was pulling the string and there was a lot of good things there. But eventually, if you can't be consistent over more than half an hour in what you want to do with the ball, and in the end, you just rely on give the ball to Reece James and he's going to put a good cross in the box, which is all they did in the second half, really. Then it has to be a bit worrying, right?
Well, the players, I think, might just start to lose a little bit of belief when they can't be ruthless enough to put teams away and they're only at 1-0 and they were playing really good for half an hour. I thought they were magnificent, Chelsea. I thought they looked really good. But my sense when I watch them is if you can stay in the game, I think Chelsea run out of ideas in the last half an hour. I think if you can get to the hour mark and you're in it at 0-0, 1-1, whatever the scoreline is, I never then fancy Chelsea to kick on and go and win the game. I don't think it's in them. It's not in Felix. It's not in Havertz. They obviously need a top-class number nine. The worry is, the contradiction to that is their style of football doesn't lend itself to having a number nine. Couldn't get Lukaku going. Bamiyang's now looks like he's never going to get a game. You know, so even if they looked at someone like Victor Osimhen, and this is not a dig at Chelsea, the worst move I think he could make is going to Chelsea because they don't play to his strengths. They keep the ball aside to our
side. But then would you not play on his strength, on the strength of the number nine that you're going to bring in?
Yeah, but if they bought Victor Osimhen, he's the type of guy, he's a throwback centre forward that wants the ball all of the time. And he's hard, he's brave, he's skillful, but he wants loads of touches of the ball. And I can imagine Osimhen coming into Chelsea like Lukaku. Lukaku was flying at Inter and they went side to side. And there was those crazy numbers when Lukaku was playing. He had like 6 or 7 touches. Well, that tells me two things. It's either the player's lazy, which Lukaku isn't, or the team's not servicing him.
I know.
Then you bring another striker in, they've got to change their ways. They can't just go side to side if you buy a new striker. So that's the worry. And if you persist with Kai Havertz, who's not a natural number nine, very, very good footballer, he's not going to get 20 goals a season.
I know.
Work has to be done.
Yeah, it is a worry. So Wednesday is Dortmund-Chelsea, of course, in the Champions League. Dortmund, who we will mention a bit later.
In good form.
6-6 since the restart. Pretty incredible what they're doing at the moment. Something that we mentioned a little bit before with Gab and went a little bit unnoticed, I think, and I wanted your opinion was, because I know you like what Badiashile has done so far for Chelsea, is that he obviously was not registered in the Champions League squads. So you've been playing with Thiago Silva and Badiashile as your pair of centre-backs in the last five games. And then on Wednesday, you need someone else to play alongside Thiago Silva, right? Whether it's Chalobah, whether it's Koulibaly, whether it's, I don't think Fofana is ready, but someone else has to play.
So that looks on the face of it, strange.
How weird is that?
That's weird, isn't it? So you're going to have a partnership in the Premier League, but break them up in the Champions League.
Exactly.
It feels weird.
For someone who hasn't played for 4 games now in the league, clearly because it was Badiashile playing for the last 4 games.
I mean,
I know you had a choice to make because you had 7, and you only could pick 3 from the 7.
Yeah. But if Badiashile wasn't in Chelsea's 11 and he was a young boy trying to make his way into the squads, you could understand it. The fact that his form has actually been really, really good, I think.
Me too.
I think it's been amazing.
Me too.
That's the only thing I can think of, trying to get into Graham Potter's head. Maybe he doesn't envisage him playing every single Premier League game and Champions League game, so he wants to rotate it a little bit. But still, not to have him in the squad is strange, because what if you get injuries?
Yeah. But again, the guy who's going to come in, whoever is the guy coming in against Dortmund to face a team that is, at the moment, scoring and creating a lot of chances, scoring a lot of goals.
See, in a weird way, if it was Thiago, this doesn't really make any sense what I'm saying, but try and bear with me. In a weird way, if it was Thiago Silva that didn't make the Champions League squads, you could understand that at 39.
Yeah.
Obviously, you want him playing because it's Champions League.
He's your best defender.
Exactly.
But still,
the other way around seems a little bit weird.
I know. But again, you play Koulibaly a little bit more maybe in the league that you've done. Like, for example, this game, 3 days before the Champions League is back, start your starting centre-back pair for the Champions League in the league.
Yeah.
So you give them 90 minutes. Listen,
is he overthinking it
on Wednesday?
Is he overthinking it?
I don't know. Maybe he had to pick Joao Felix, Enzo and Mudryk as the three and didn't have the choice.
Nobody ran out of numbers.
Yeah, nobody gave him the choice, you know, and he said, okay, this has to be the three. And it is Mudryk for the pace, I guess, him or Madueke for the pace, clearly. Enzo is already so instrumental.
So Madueke's made the...
No.
No, he has not made the cut neither.
So if you don't have Mudryk or Madueke, you lose the pace that you paid for in the January because you needed it. Fair enough. But I don't know. I'm just looking forward to seeing what team he puts out against Dortmund and how they play, because this is a huge game.
It's massive.
If they get battered against Dortmund, which is obviously...
I don't think they'll get battered.
No, but you know, like if things go bad, I don't know if they get a red card, like something...
2-0 or something.
Yeah. What's Graham Potter like? Yesterday, I heard him saying we have to be... Or Saturday, we have to be humble against Dortmund. Why do you have to be humble?
Why?
For what?
Can't be ruthless.
I know. What's the humility? How is he going to use you to play against a team on fire at the moment? No, be. Yeah, I don't know. Or find another word.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to arrogant going to Dortmund.
I think one of the greatest press conferences I think I ever heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure it was Jose when he was at Chelsea, and he named his Chelsea team, and he named the Barcelona team the day before a game.
Yeah.
And it was just like, this is our team. I know your team. Let's get it on.
I know.
And it's like, that's what the players want to hear, man. They want to hear your manager going like, we're going to turn Dortmund over. Where you wouldn't say we're too good for them.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
There's ways you can say it, but don't be on the back foot.
You've won two games in 13. If you were 13 wins in 13, and maybe there was a risk that you could go to Dortmund and the yellow wall and 80,000 fans against you in the Champions League, and you think, okay, I don't want my boys to be arrogant or complacent because we aren't such good. You've won two in 13. Wait, you need to be humble. You've been humbled by your own results already. What's the point of being humble for?
Not in the Champions League. You've
got
to be ruthless.
This is my issue now. With Graham Potter, I think he's a lovely guy and I think he's a great coach, there's no doubt. And I hope he does well at Chelsea.
Same.
He ends up...
Same.
But right now, he says the wrong things all the time. All the time.
So even a little bit after the penalty scenario when Thomas Soucek handled the ball, go in there all guns blazing.
He was a little bit like,
we were unlucky, difficult for the refs.
Destroy the fourth... I don't know who the fourth... But
I mean, I
think everybody else would have.
I know it's not his style and it's not his character. So you're asking a man to change his ways. But I just think for the Chelsea fan, they've left the stadium fuming.
I know.
You know, everyone watching around the world are fuming. And then your manager's just a little bit humble and quiet. And it's like, no, man, like go in there.
I know. And he's under so much pressure. I don't understand some of the lines that he comes out with. I don't understand.
I think there's going to have to be a point. Jules, there's going to have to be a point where I think he's got to change his ways a little bit in terms of his personality, because you can have two wins in 13 when you're the Brighton manager.
Yeah.
You know, you can do that. There's no expectation. At times, he's overachieved at Brighton. When you get a job like Chelsea, I was chatting to Gianfranco Zola yesterday. When you get a job like the Chelsea job, the performances, have to be there. But it's not the be-all and end-all of performances. It's the wins.
I know.
As a Chelsea manager, you have to win.
I know.
And when Todd Bowley's pitching up in the stands, texting or on his phone, spending $600 million, he's going to demand wins. And even though we all say Graham Potter's he'll be given time, which I hope that's the way, you know, if you're then two wins in 17-18 as a Chelsea manager, you ain't going to last.
I know.
It's just a fact. It doesn't matter if it's Chelsea. Frank Lampard got sacked at Everton for 1-14.
It's
the numbers.
Exactly.
You've got to win.
You can't be,
I don't know, 10, 11, 12, 13 points off a top four. As a Chelsea manager, you've got to fight for the title.
Yeah, that's true. Enzo Fernandez, you know, we saw obviously his debut game against Fulham, where there were some good things, but at times maybe too much sideways or...
But takes time.
Yeah.
Takes
time. This was better. I mean, obviously the assist, the cross on the goal, but overall, really solid performance.
Really good. People are looking, I think, at the transfer fee, 115 million, and probably thinking he's a game changer. Well, he will be, I think,
He will be for sure.
You know, I see an unbelievable player there. And again, you know, he's trying to figure out not the weaknesses, but the runs of Kai Havertz. If he's not making a forward run, then instead of playing that forward pass like he did for João Felix for the goal, he might have to then go, oh, he wants it to feet. So he's trying to figure out Mudrik.
Yeah.
He's trying to figure out you know, all the players in around him, the midfield partnerships. So there's a lot to take in, you know, in the first couple of games, but the signs are really good.
And finally, another piece of good news, I guess, and I just wanted your opinion on Thiago Silva's new contract. He's 39, as we said. He's got another year now until the summer 2024.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
I don't know if he will play as much next season, and I don't even know if the plan this season was to play him that much because he's been basically in the team the whole time.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm completely biased.
No, you don't have to be. I just love the guy.
I just think he's amazing.
Judge him on his career. Incredible. And judge him on, you know, you can have a career and then you can fall off and you can dip.
Yeah.
There's no dip in his performances.
It's incredible.
You know, he sees the game better than most. He reads it better than most. Yeah. His positional sense is really good. And whenever you think at 39 someone's going to do him, they never do.
No.
Because he's always got that half a yard. He's always got that yard. And I think he's a brilliant player to watch. And I think if you're Graham Potter, I think you want to rely on him.
Rely
on his experience, how he handles himself.
The leadership
conducts,
as well.
All of that, completely. Yeah.
Right, let's stay humble, shall we?
Shall we stay humble? Yeah, yeah. We're very humble today.
Let's see what happens for Chelsea, obviously, in the Champions League in midweek against Dortmund. Maybe that's a turning point that they were waiting for, and good performance, good win there, and then something good.
There you go.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, enough West Ham and Chelsea done. What about some quick hits?
Let's do it.
Arsenal dropped 2 points against Brentford at the Emirates on Saturday, Don, but the PGMOL apologised to them.
Oh, what they said?
For VR error. Oh, my word.
Days. I was on comms duels on the game. And the block-off free kick, I think it's been in the Premier League, I think going back to Tony Pulis's Stoke days.
Yeah.
So off the top of my head, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 years. So when I'm co-comming on games, I'm always looking for block-offs from wide free kicks, corners. Exactly this scenario happened.
Yeah.
Ethan Pinnock was the centre-back for Brentford on the angle, waiting for the diagonal free kick. He was standing in an offside position. Then he blocked Gabriel, so he interferes with Gabriel's position. If you don't think that's interfering, if you don't think he's offside, which I thought he was, fair enough. The cross then comes in. Pinnock wins a header, drops it down to Norgaard, who's a yard offside. He crosses it, Tony tapping. There's two offsides in the same move.
Yeah.
You can get wrangled up in different phases of play. You can look at it to the nth degree, but there should have been an offside call in there.
But again, what happened? Did they
it's
draw
obvious.
The lines? Did he even draw the line? So, like, what? I mean, I don't understand how you can.
How can
not
you be?
See it.
How can you be?
Lee Mason was the VR.
Let's role play for a second. I'm Lee Mason, and I'm checking something, and I'm looking at something, and there's a pen there, and I go, I forgot to use the pen. It can't happen, Jules.
But I
forgot to use the pen to draw a line on the screen. My job as a co-commentator is harder than a VAR because I've got to call it in real time.
Yeah.
I get one view and I've got to go, this is what's happened.
Yeah.
And we're not the Oracle co-commentators. We don't get it right all of the time. But I watch Ethan Pinnock on the block on Gabriel. He's half a yard offside. Yeah. Then Norgaard's a yard offside. It's like, you've got to spot this. You have to.
This is the best league in the world.
I know.
It's the best league with the most... money, the most at stake, the most anything you want, and they make blunders like that.
I've not got an. What can I say? I've not got an outro.
It's just, so that one, the Chelsea one that we mentioned before, the one at Brighton, where they looked at the wrong player. I mean,
it was a shock over the weekend.
Oh, and if you're Brighton, if you're Arsenal, and they apologize to you, okay, you take the apologies and you say, okay.
Means, yeah,
but like, we lost 2 points.
Well, Howard Webb's got it on now, hasn't he? He's got it on now to try and obviously fix all the problems. Because the worst thing is, Jules, these are basic problems. You know, they're not tough decisions. You know, these are quite easy. You forget to draw a line on an offside. You mark a player wrong instead of the one that's behind.
I mean,
Socek dives on the ball.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It was a bad weekend.
Lee Mason was the VAR referee at the Arsenal, the Manchester United Arsenal game.
Yeah.
When they disallowed the Martinelli goal for a foul. Remember, Odegaard on Eriksen before.
Yeah, which I thought was a foul, yeah.
They apologized for that because they realized that was a mistake. That was Lee Mason already. Now, Lee Mason has made another mistake against Arsenal in a game like that.
So what's up?
When they're fighting for the title.
5 points?
5 points. But then you don't know if Martinelli goal stands early on at Old Trafford. I don't know if they win or not. But just, I mean, Lee Mason cannot referee on VAR anymore. He cannot be involved anymore.
The only thing I would say, and this is not a defense on Lee Mason at all, is when you look at the pattern of the game, in the end, in my humble opinion, I thought the draw was the correct result because I thought Brentford's goal should have stood.
Yeah.
When Aubameyang went through,
Gabriel
slipped.
Yeah.
I thought that should have been. But still, if you're Mikel Arteta, you know, you're watching the game and you're prepped from the referees about the laws and the rules of the game and they're not implemented.
I know.
As a manager, you know, when you're in the heat of battle,
players,
we can fume and we can vent as players, but the manager's got to stand there and front up in front of the cameras. And Mikel Arteta must have been so frustrated.
Yeah.
So Real Madrid won the Club World Cup, Jules, for the fifth time.
Yeah, they beat Al Hilal in the final 5-3, in a final that they control. I thought they would be given more of a game, to be fair, but they went quickly 2-0 up. It's their 100th trophy in the history.
And I read that Ancelotti was under a little bit of pressure.
Yeah, maybe. 31 trophies under Florentino Perez. Just amazing. Benzema coming back, scoring and assisting.
Vinny looked back.
Vinny as well. Good. The league now, they can focus on the league again, but they got the trophy that they wanted. Well done to them. And like last weekend, Manchester City don't miss out on the opportunity to close the gap with Arsenal to 3 points. They destroy Aston Villa with a back three and maybe a bit of a worry about Erling Haaland.
Yeah, I'm not sure what his knock is in terms of how serious it is. I think he'll more than likely be fit for the Arsenal game. But what I liked about what Guardiola done was the starting 11. It went strong again.
Yeah.
And I thought, we often say in the game, like, you've got to trust someone like Guardiola because he's so good and you can't question his opinion. Well, you can.
Yeah, you can.
But you can.
And you should.
And you should. Because, you know, when you rest or you don't play Kevin De Bruyne against Tottenham.
And Gundogan.
And you allow João Cancelo, I think the best fullback in world football, who does what Pep wants to do in terms of inverted fullbacks. I thought that was a major error and it was costly. Yeah. I looked at his team at Villa. And as soon as I seen the team lineup, I thought, they'll win that. And the fans must have thought that.
Yeah.
The players on the pitch must have thought that when De Bruyne was back. And they were really, really good. It's how City should be. And that, maybe it's all off-the-field problems, is maybe it's given them that little spark to go and think, well, the world's against us. That's sometimes what you need sometimes. And that win, I knew was coming when I seen the lineup.
Yeah.
And then I'll probably make them favourites to beat Arsenal, even though it's away from home. But only just.
Yeah, we'll see. Wednesday's going to be amazing.
Right, Jules, this is going to be touchy.
No!
What's happening at PSG? Another defeat.
Oh, they lost to Monaco 3-1. To be fair, Don, they could have been at some point 5-1 down. It was that bad. They had a lot of players missing, so there was no Mbappe, no Messi, no Verratti, no Hakimi from Kiko, no Nuno Mendes, no Sergio Ramos, no Kimpembe. So, okay, but injuries can't be an excuse. It was still a decent team. It was still a good team. But they just never turned up. They don't play football. There's no team, no team spirit, no cohesion. It's just so bad.
This is another PSG manager that's looking like he's not going to last.
Yeah. I don't know.
How do you manage that club? Serious question. How do you manage? You put an arm around the players, they'll let you down. If you get stuck into the players, you'll get a reaction for a certain amount of time, then they'll let you down again.
They argue with each other. They argue with Galtier, with Luis Campos, the sporting director, and there's Bayern on Tuesday night in the Champions League. I'm going. I don't even know where I'm going.
Why are you going?
I don't want to go. I don't even. I'd be in the stadium like that. My hands are going to be. I don't even want to watch. Oh, my days. I don't know. I just hope that the only winner is up. I mean, they've hit bad.
Is this rock bottom?
is for them. I mean, there's worse, of course, but two defeats like that against Marseille and Monaco.
Because the league's a league, isn't it?
It's just, they're still 5 points clear. I don't know how. But. Don, Manchester United living late, but beat Leeds at Elland Road 2-0 thanks to an amazing Marcus Rashford yet again.
On fire, isn't he?
Unstoppable, man.
Unstoppable. This is him, not just at his best. He is super confident. And I think what happens as well, Jules, I mean, the game was the game. It was quite a good game. It was quite ferocious.
Quite intense.
I thought Leeds played their part. I thought they started the second half, Leeds, like, really strong. They could have maybe potentially took the lead. But then Marcus Rashford scores a great header. Oh. And I thought the 2-0 flattered them a little bit in terms of how Leeds played. But he's starting to get that perspective, I think, Marcus Rashford. If you're a fan and you're driving your car on the way to a game, or you're just driving around doing whatever you're doing, and you hear Man United scored, you're going to think Rashford. And that's what happens just when you're in this purple patch, when you're in this vein of form where he's absolutely on fire. Mm. Everything he touches now turns to goals. He's cruising, isn't he?
It's crazy. And you know what? Ten Hag's doing a great job. We've said that many times. I think he made a mistake. I think he gets lucky. Lucky is the wrong word, but he gets things his way now. Show a centre-back in a game like that, for me, with Malacia left-back, is a mistake from kickoff. But he brings on Lisandro Martinez, who has a great 30 minutes or something, and then Shaw gives the assist. Shaw goes back to left back.
Yeah.
So there's nothing Ten Hag can do that is wrong now anyway. Even when it's a mistake, somehow in the end, and Shaw, great cross for the... And then once they won the lap after that, it's good. But yeah, well done to them, really.
So Barca, 11-point gap over Real Madrid. It's done, isn't it?
You know what? This is a tough game, going away to Villarreal, like they went away to Atletico Madrid and they won. They went away to Betis and they won. And they were once again so solid defensively. Koundé, Araujo. Araujo was outstanding. And they scored an amazing goal, really. When they recovered the ball high, they play forward, 1-2. Pedri, Lewandowski, lovely, lovely finish. And they were good. In the end, they conceded a few chances at the end. It was a bit shaky, but they deserved to win. And they, 11 points with the game in hand, obviously. That Real Madrid will play in midweek next week against Villarreal, I think, actually. But even 8 points, they look so strong right now.
Which means
that the game against United on Thursday is going to be...
What a game.
Special. So special. Can't wait for that.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
And what about Napoli, Don? It's a game that you commentated on last night.
My favourite side.
Yeah, after they win against Cremonese, 3-0. The lead at the top is a massive 16 points because Inter only played tonight on Monday night.
Yeah, they cruised again. They had to work for it, Jules. Mm. Kvaratskhelia, on his 22nd birthday, scored in the 22nd minute.
Yeah. Everything is written for them in the start.
It's written, 16 points clear. Osimhen got his goal again, who's absolutely on flames this season. And then, you know, the squad depth now at Napoli, that Spalletti's got to work with. It's not just the starting 11. He's got 17, 18 players. He can make changes. And he made changes in the last 15, 20 minutes of the game. Elmas come on. Yeah. Di Lorenzo with a perfectly weighted little clip ball into him. A stunning finish. But the atmosphere was electric.
Yeah.
The atmosphere was electric before the game. I predicted a 7-0. I got carried away and I thought, well, Cremonese have not won
too far, 3-7.
Yeah, well, you know, but Cremonese had not won a game all season. Yeah. Credit to them, you know, they actually played quite well.
And they won at Napoli, of course, in the Coppa Italia, and beat
Roma. So they're a good side, even though they've not won any games, but their attitude's good. And they tested Napoli. But once they got that first goal, it's that movie you've seen before. Yeah. When you're desperate to get the first goal, and then the crowd were desperate and they were pushing them on, and it was all a bit, it was always a little bit frantic because they were so desperate to take the lead. Once they took the lead, they relaxed and they played, and it was 2 and it was 3. Now, 16 clear, they can't blow it from here. No chance.
Surely not.
Can't.
Surely not.
So Bayern have prepared perfectly for their clash against PSG tomorrow, Jules, with an easy 3-0 win over Bochum.
Yeah, I mean, easy. I said that. I put that in the quick. Easy with the result, although at times defensively, they just still give away a few chances, which gives me a little bit, like tiny bit of hope, but up from that.
How much hope you got, is it?
Not much. I mean, with Messi in your team and Mbappe, you know, coming back and be on the bench and Neymar, you should have hope. Of course, I have hope, but this Bayern team going forward, especially because I think the unbalance is still there defensively, but they're on fire, man. Musiala is just so good. They play with the back three. I think they're going to go back to a back four against PSG, but they still have something, you know, very good going forward. So much depth as well. So much talent. So we'll see. And tonight, Don, on Monday night, as we're recording the show on Monday morning, is the Merseyside derby, of course, between two of your former teams. What do you think will happen?
I can't
we should
win.
Say that John Brooks was supposed to be the VAR referee for that game after the shocker they had at the Palace Brighton game. He's been taken off it and taken off as well. The VAR, his VAR duties for the Arsenal City game as well. So that's a big move. What do you think for tonight?
I hate this game because I can't win. I can't win because I just can't, obviously, because I've played for both sides and I know what it's like being having a foot in both camps.
Yeah.
It's a great one for Everton to go into at this present time off the back of the Arsenal win for Sean Dyche. I mean, if he goes to Anfield tonight and wins, I mean, legendary status. I'm beating Arsenal and beating Liverpool in your first two games. It'd be amazing.
Yeah.
I can't help but think that Liverpool will react. And I know I've been saying that quite a bit this season. I've always thought, commentating on Liverpool, right, it's this game that gets their season going. And they can't get going. They've got no momentum whatsoever. What I did like was the way that Jurgen Klopp come out fighting yesterday. Mm-hmm. And he's come out swinging by saying, I'm not going to leave. You know, we're in a bad moment, but think how good the good times are going to be when we start winning trophies. He was bullish. He wasn't down.
He was.
And I think he made a smart move a couple of days ago after the last defeat. He said to everyone, I don't want to see anyone for 2 days. Everyone have 2 days off.
Yeah.
So it's like cabin fever. Me and you spend time together after a month.
You're
going to need a time apart. Just the way it is. And he's done the right thing. So I can't help but think there's going to be a reaction from their side, but still they're not in great form. So it makes, in all honesty, it makes for a really unpredictable game.
It makes for a great game.
So Atletico Madrid needed a miracle from Jan Oblak to beat Celta.
Yeah, 1-0 win. Memphis Depay, by the way, 89th minute winner, which is special for him. But before that, I mean, they were saved by the crossbar. Savic got sent off again for Atletico, who had a kind of couple of good chances early on at 0-0. And then Oblak made this incredible save. I mean, the reflex on the line, it would have been an own goal, I think, from Hermoso. Incredible. I mean, he was incredible again through the whole game. And in the end, they get a win. Not really playing well, Atletico, but they just have to win to stay in that top four bracket because behind them, they've got good teams. They've got Betis, Real Sociedad, Villarreal all around them for fighting for that third and fourth place, you know, behind Real Madrid and Barcelona. So huge win, but a big thanks to Oblak for the win. Tottenham went from beating Manchester City to being humiliated by Leicester in the space of 1 week. Don, what happened? And by the way, to make it worse, they also lost Rodrigo Bentancur for the remaining of the season.
ACL injury by the looks of it. That's a real blow. I mean, they were defensively all over the place.
Pedro Porro for a start.
Eric Dier for me.
Oh, Dier as well.
I mean,
my God.
You know, there's two goals that I saw all the goals, I've seen the game, but there was two goals where Eric Dier is passive and he's standing off Iheanacho for one of the goals.
Doesn't engage him.
I don't know. Go and close him down. And then Harvey Barnes, he does exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And then to make it worse, which I hate, it's one of my pet hates, he starts pointing at everyone else. You do this, you do that, you do it.
Oh, my word.
I mean, that is Tottenham.
How can you be so good 1 week and so bad the next?
I've got no idea. It's maybe very Spursy getting up for Man City and then getting walloped. And the four could have been six.
Yeah, easy.
They got walloped. But good on Leicester, you know, they're back.
And I mean, they took their goal really. Yeah. And the Mendy goal, he never scores anyway in the first place. But
best goal of his lifetime.
Of his whole family forever, generations and generations.
Every Mendy player, that's the best goal Mendy's ever scored. Milan finally won a game.
Yay!
Wasn't pretty, but they beat Torino on Friday.
Yeah, they did. And they needed that badly, didn't they? Because the terrible run they were in, slipping down the table. And before welcoming Spurs, of course, in the Champions League on Tuesday night. Big win. Giroud with the goal. Theo, who's also been pretty poor in the last few games, with the cross. So a bit of momentum, a bit of confidence, bringing back in Zlatan on the bench.
Yeah.
I think even that kind of leadership that they missed too, will be good. And let's see when they get everybody fit again, like Bennacer, you know, fully fit. All the
they're
kind
just very
guys.
Fragile at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. You,
I mean, I
3-5-2 that he tries to play in.
Yeah, I toss that coin when I think Milan Tottenham.
Yeah,
I just toss it and go.
Should be great. It's going to be great watch.
Could be a great game.
Be great watch on Tuesday night. Don, I thought Nathan Jones was one of the best coaches in Europe. Best. I mean, I heard him saying it.
Best in Europe.
You know, best XG against, best everything you want. Although he doesn't want to marry Welsh women, but that's another matter.
He doesn't want to be a PE teacher.
So why was he sacked after 95
days?
You
can't sack the best coach in Europe. There was too much waffle.
Oh my word.
I mean, I love a manager that's emotional. Yeah, Conte's emotional.
I agree.
Nathan Jones was very, very emotional. And whenever I was hearing him speak, I was like, stop talking. Stop talking.
Please
stop talking.
And then you
do all of that and tell the world that you're the best coach in Europe. Of course you're going to lose the next game. It's just standard. And then he blamed it on Wolves being down to 10 men.
Yeah, yeah. For 75 minutes or something.
It's like, it was coming. Maybe it was the poor appointment in the first place. Maybe it was too big for him.
Yeah, maybe.
Board need to take a look at themselves, but, I thought that was a sharp learning curve for him.
What it's like to be a Premier League manager. Exactly.
Sometimes you lose the dressing room.
Exactly as well. And the fans were all against it. I know
from a player's point of view, when you've got a manager telling the world that you're the best coach in Europe, the players behind the scenes are going,
especially when you've won one in, I don't know,
nine
in
or ten?
In the league or something crazy like that. It's just
incredible. Oh, so Dortmund have never played Chelsea before this week, Champions League matchup.
Yeah.
And they're prepared for a 2-0 win over Werder Bremen, their sixth win in a row.
Six in six, to be fair.
On fire. And Dortmund keeping clean sheets.
I know, you're right. And they played really well, to be fair. I thought even if the first goal took a bit of time to come, Guino Beatons, that's how you say his name. Wonderful goal, by the way, Schlotterbeck come in and playing in with him. And Guino Beatons, one of the younger players again, making wave this season.
Love a young player at Dortmund, isn't
that?
Yeah, amazing, isn't it?
Coming from City, the young Englishman, great. And then Julian Brandt, who's been outstanding and who will face Kai Havertz, one of his best friends. They were together by Leverkusen coming through as well. So special night for them too. But man, I would not want to face. And Dortmund have their issues, of course, and you never know. They can.
They can let you down. They're the best team in Europe.
Yeah,
at letting you down.
I think they could be the best opponent for Chelsea to have on Wednesday, and the worst opponent for Chelsea to have. And that's great because Chelsea could be the same for Dortmund.
Yeah.
So it's going to be again fascinating to watch them too. But they certainly have prepared in the best way with another win and, you know, keeping in touch with Union Berlin and with Bayern at the top of the Bundesliga. So really good. Dolan, I feel that since on this show, you said that Newcastle were the perfect team.
I'm like Nathan Jones, aren't I?
They haven't really been the same. They drew again this weekend, the third in a row. What's going on?
Right. How do you see this? See, I'm always glass half full.
Yeah, me too.
Right.
Me too.
Always. So you can say if it's half empty, you can say three draws on the spin, lost a bit of momentum.
Yeah.
Bruno's not been playing.
Yeah.
He's a miss.
Yeah.
Or
for sure.
Half full, you go, Newcastle are unbeaten in 17.
That's true as well.
So still pretty formidable.
Very true.
You know, when you look at all the top teams across the Premier League, the Man Uniteds, the Man Cities, you know, the Liverpools, the Spurs, et cetera, to be unbeaten in 17.
True.
It's still pretty amazing. But I know what you mean. I get the spark's just gone a little bit.
It feels like, and they concede goals, which they didn't before.
Yeah.
You know, that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only one goal again. But
exactly.
Still, yeah, but before they hadn't conceded since like November
like
or something.
It 12 hours or something. Yeah.
Something
maybe subconsciously the cup finals had an impact on the players. Aliko Fanta looked forward to in a couple of weeks' time.
You know what? I just see that top four, I mean, for third and fourth, I mean, for fourth place, sorry, going down to the wire.
Them and
if they miss out on one point, for example,
then
you maybe go back to this Bournemouth
true.
Game where you think, okay, this is a game that you have to win if you want to finish top four.
True, but again, half full, if Newcastle beat Man United in the cup final and finish fifth, that's still an amazing season because Newcastle are well ahead of where Newcastle thought they should be this season.
Being
in the bottom two, only winning one game when Eddie Howe took over.
To be fighting.
I mean, Newcastle were second at one point, Jules.
No. You're right.
Still
in the
back. I get it.
Still very good.
Yeah. So it was the Ryan Cherki show for Lyon.
Oh, my God. And you know what? Since he was 16 and made his debut, we've said what an incredible talent and gifted player he is. There's no doubt. And then, which is, I think, normal. I mean, you started really young, but at that age, the consistency is your main issue. You could
Was he 16?
Yeah, he was 16. But you could see the talent already done. Yeah. Incredible. But then there was one good 20 minutes and then nothing for the rest of the game. Next game, nothing. Next game. Now he's got a consistency. He's got 3-3 now. And yesterday, it was amazing against Lens. So big clash for Lyon, who needed points. Lens, who were third in the table. Before Monaco win against PSG, they both went for it. It was intense. It was good. A lovely assist for Lacazette on the first goal. He plays behind Lacazette as a 10 now.
Right.
He can play second striker. You can play him wide, but he's got right foot, left foot. So he's one of them who takes corners from the two side in swinging right foot, left foot. But just like that, he puts the ball wherever he wants. And then he scores. So assist with his left foot on the first goal.
Yeah.
Goal on the second goal with his right foot.
Yeah.
But just every touch.
So that's it then. Chelsea are going to buy him for 200 million.
Well, yeah, probably. PSG wanted to sign him in January. They could not do it. But you know, every touch, and he's so elegant. He's one of those, like, he's so silky and smart. Man,
they're lovely players to watch.
Juventus are still without Paul Pogba, Don, which, by the way, is bad, really bad. But they beat Fiorentina 1-0, to go back into the top half of the table, ninth in the table after the 15 points knocked out. Again, little by little, you know, you come back and you get a bit of momentum.
I think they're playing well. It's just all the distractions off the pitch, Jules. When you get done by 15 points, you've got to try and react when they were looking like they were going to get top four. And actually, at one point, you know, probably 4 months ago, I said, forget Juve for top four. They're never going to get there. Yeah. Then they got themselves in a title fight.
I agree.
All of a sudden, they were second. I was going, I have no idea how that's happened. Because it was something like, I think it was eight in a row, winning 1-0. And it was like amazing. Then all of a sudden, bang, 15 points. So they've got to try and react. So it was an important win.
Mm.
But one I don't think you can get carried away with because there's so many problems at our football club.
And you know, first time this season, so we are February something.
Yeah.
That Allegri was able to play Chiesa, Vlahovic, Di Maria from kickoff.
Helps.
So when that's your front three, and you start the season, this is your front three, and then you can only play them mid-February.
Exactly.
Like, wow.
And as you said, no Paul Pogba.
Yeah, as well, yeah.
I mean,
injuries have been...
He's due back? Is he...
So he's working in the gym. They say he's not ready yet. Maybe another 3 weeks. But like, every time it's another 2 weeks, another 3 weeks.
Well, I read reports that they were thinking maybe of ripping up the contract. I don't know how that's true.
Yeah, that was not true. But, you know, he's turned 30 in March. Next month, he will be 30.
Wow.
And he hasn't played this season.
He's lost a couple of years, isn't he?
Yeah, it's sad. It's really sad. Really sad.
So, Jules, something rare and special happened on Sunday in the Scottish Cup tie between Rangers and Partick Thistle. I've not seen it, but I've heard about it.
Yeah. So, if you haven't seen it, it's a cup game, of course. Ibrox, at some point, Malik Tillman, the American attacking midfielder who's on loan from Bayern at Rangers, gets fouled. He's on the floor, and the Rangers players put the ball out. So it's a throw-in for Partick Thistle, but they're going to obviously give the ball back to Rangers. But Malik Tillman is on the floor, so doesn't see that the game has been stopped in that way. So he thinks Partick is just going to have a throw-in, and they're just going to play the throw-in. So he goes and presses the guy on the ball, gets the ball back, and goes straight towards goal and scores. I mean, at some point he stopped because he's clearly realizing, hang on, why am I the only one running? But he still finishes the move and scores. Imagine the party players go mad. It's like a bit of a fight, everything. And then fair play to Michael Beale, the Rangers manager, who says, you know what? We can't score a goal like this.
Yeah.
So let them score. Let Partick Thistle score. So kick off after the Malik Tillman's goal. And then they literally let the Partick striker go and score in an empty net, basically, which I thought was really gracious from Michael Beale. Didn't have to do it. He could have just said, well.
Good standards, isn't it?
Very good standard. And he said, you know, we are Rangers. We behave in the right way.
I like that.
I like that a lot. And he's not the first one to do. You remember Bielsa, which was against Villa?
Sheffield United, Arsenal, I think.
Yeah, that one as well. But it's still lovely when you see a manager saying, you know what, we made a mistake. Malik didn't know. Clearly, he didn't know.
It's good that he didn't want to put that pressure on the young boy as well. So he's not that type of player. He didn't know.
Yeah, and Rangers still won, by the way, 3-2. Partick Thistle sacked their manager straight after the game as well. So not a good afternoon for him. But yeah, well done, Michael Beale. I think really nice thing to do. We mentioned Brentford's draw with Arsenal. Don Ivan Toney, who scored the equaliser in the game, revealed after that he received a lot of racial abuse on social media after the game.
Ah, it's just horrific, isn't it? I mean, fair play to Arsenal, fair play to Brentford for coming together to try and find the culprit. Actually, fair play to Ivan Toney for coming out and speaking.
I think he's brave. Yeah.
I think it's very good. I think more players should do it because this needs to stop.
Oh,
it's just, it's awful. It's
every
horrific, isn't it?
Every week we hear and saying like, oh, another player got abused like racially. What do we have to do to
it
stop
should be,
that?
Like, it should be lifetime stadium ban. Shouldn't be allowed in football. Maybe a criminal act.
I know.
There has to be, yeah, in my opinion, short. There's got to be a severe punishment for this. So Emi Martinez gave his first interview, Jules, since the World Cup. What did he say?
Yeah, so if you haven't seen this in the France Football edition of this week, and to be fair, it was a good interview. And he said, like, he doesn't really say per se, I regret some of the things I did.
He didn't regret the little thing
so
that he'd
done.
So
he did with the trophy. He said, you know, basically he did it after the Copa America, which was not really a good idea.
Yeah.
And this time he says that the other players like Messi and the others were saying, you're not, we dare you to do it again. You can't do it again in the World Cup final.
He got sucked in.
So he did it for 1 second and he said, like, it was a bad idea. He explained, you know, the doll, the Mbappé doll.
Yeah.
That was
bad.
And he said, basically, when they were doing the parade, everybody was throwing stuff at them, like dolls and everything. He picked it up and he saw it was Mbappé again for a second.
And someone's gone.
Yeah. And then he threw it back. He said, how can Mbappé be my doll when he scored 4 goals against me?
Exactly.
I'm his doll, you know?
Exactly.
So
yeah.
there was some nice things in there where he showed a bit of, you know, remorse,
yeah,
and it was good. And then he told about his story, which is an incredible story, really. But yeah, I'm still gutted that one. And he obviously comes back on the Colomwani chance and he says, you know, I let him believe that I wanted him to shoot that way. So
yeah,
I kind of opened the door a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I made the save. He said, this is the greatest save of my court career. You know,
absolutely.
Like, so,
yeah,
you know, but at least he gave an interview. He was honest.
Good.
He answered every question. So you can't take that away from him. So in a way, well done to Emi Martinez. Don, that's all we had time for today, man. Thank you so much for coming. It
Loved
was
it.
Very enjoyable.
Great top, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Cruz Azul from Mexico, 0405. Home kit, I hope you like it. You know where they come from anyway. But thank you to Don Hutchinson for all of you for listening. We'll be back on Thursday, of course. Gab will be back, maybe still with his eyes a bit wet after the Philadelphia Eagles defeating the Super Bowl. But we will obviously review the Champions League and the huge Arsenal-Manchester City game from Wednesday night. So, like he always says, love the game, love yourself, love your neighbor or something like that.